So if you'd like to, you can join me in that chant which I shared this afternoon. I'm going to go through it just 3 times, like I did this afternoon. And if you'd like, you can just follow along with me, and then we'll talk about it briefly afterwards. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. That's a very famous chant in the Theravada Buddhist tradition. It often precedes the chant that Steve shared with us about the Triple Gem. It means honor to the Blessed One, to the Exalted One, to the Fully Enlightened One, obviously, the Buddha. It's got a sweetness in it that I like a lot. And I hadn't actually felt it come through for, feels like, years, and it just popped up. Did you like it? You can chant it before bed in the morning, you can chant it anytime. Out loud or just inside. So tonight's talk is called In the Kula Forest Reserve. Subtitle: Seen Clearly, Seen Through. Nature lovers. Yeah. Nature lovers have hidden within them the lover of true nature. We've all heard the phrase, nature lover. So-and-so is a nature lover. Hidden until it isn't inside the nature lover is the lover of true nature. Why is this so? Because the natural world is not just a reflection of our true nature. It is our true nature. It's the open secret, and all secrets are actually open. But that doesn't mean we can see them. So the fact that the natural world is our true nature is a direct metaphor. When probably the world's greatest mythologist, Joseph Campbell, was asked by the somewhat presumptuous interviewer at the end of a very good interview towards the end of Joseph's life, and this is a man who understands myth deeply and can articulate it across the traditions, and he understands what metaphors are. So the guy pops the question in the last few minutes of the interview. Joseph, what's a metaphor? And Joseph, being quite on his toes and bright, isn't going to have this you ask me, I answer thing right at the end. If you're going to ask a question like that, at the end of an interview like this, you're going to get a counter question out of me. And so he throws it right back at the guy. You tell me what a metaphor is. And of course, not of course, but the guy gets flustered, and you know, all right. The boy runs like a deer, is what he says. What do you think Campbell said? Not a metaphor. The metaphor is the boy is a deer. I know this sounds a little stretchy in a way here, but we can do it in the last night, I hope. You are the tree. Not like. Right? What's a like word do? Simile?
Simile.
Correct. And then the analogies, they're nice. Analogies are great. Similes are great. I love them. The metaphor gets right to the money, though. Direct. You are the breath. You're not like the breath. You are the stars. You're not like the stars. You are the sun. This is the nature. Open secret. We're exploring the open secret. We're allowing the secret to open. We're allowing the mystery to open. We're allowing ourselves not to know, not to have to figure it out, not to have to understand it, and maybe even not to have to write it down. I said maybe. Just under 4 months ago, I moved by myself to a place called Kula, K-U-L-A, on the island of Maui in the Hawaiian island chain. Why, you might ask? I'm asking that too. I closed about, let's count it up, 40-year office therapy practice, multiple offices in different places. It was really hard. The momentum, all of the energy going out, all of the responding, all of the connections, all of the work that went on for so long, it was big. It was a big change. But it had to happen. I suppose, I don't know, but I suppose it began this move to Kula. When I went there for the first time in the mid-80s, and I stood in a friend's house at 10 a.m. in the morning. I remember it like I'm looking at you. And what I began to call a perfect ambient space opened. The eyes were open. I was actually doing standing meditation, but I didn't know what standing meditation was. I had never learned standing meditation. All I know is I was standing in his living room. And this perfect ambient moment went on for quite a while. It was timeless. Eyes open, ears open, mind open, body open, heart open, nature open. Stunning. I think I got a little fortunate to pretty much on the spot have a sense. This is not about this place. You know, physical location, place. But as the years went by, many years, that place didn't go away. When I go back and visit my friends there, I never went back to that same spot, but when I go and visit my friends there, I always felt really good. I always really liked it there. I started to think, I like this place more than any place I've ever been on the planet. What's this about, Paul? And then this need to change. Here comes Minger's book. I didn't know about that part where he talks about throwing wood on the fire. He didn't have to leave the monastery. He didn't have to take off his robes. He didn't have to take himself right up to death, actually through it. He didn't need to take that kind of risk. He did, though. He called it putting wood on the fire. Next thing you know, that's what I was doing in my own way. And it started to rise. Is my practice strong enough? Can I handle what I'm opening myself up to here? You're making some decisions here, Paul. You're making some choices. I couched it in my mind as I'm going on a retreat. I'm taking a belated sabbatical. I said it to other people. I even said I needed to take a sabbatical just before the recession hit. But the recession hit, and it hit me in ways that were very, very stunning and painful. And it hit many other people that I knew in ways that were stunning and painful and overwhelming. That opening that happened in my friend's living room. Story got interesting, more interesting to me. I was standing in George Bush International Airport, Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. About 9:30 at night. Plane was canceled. You know how it goes in the airport when planes are canceled, especially if a bunch of them are canceled. Some people just kind of calm down and relax, even lie down. Okay, I'm not doing what I was going to do, so I'm just going to take it easy. The face masks come out, and they just start chilling. And then there's other people who are going the other way. Got to change my ticket, got to get over here, got to do that. And it starts moving around like this. That was happening. I don't know what I'm going to do that night. I don't know who's going to pay for that. I don't know where I'm going to go. Am I going to pay? You know how it goes. I'm standing there. Bang. Out of nowhere. Comes nowhere again. Mind goes, this is just like when you were standing in Kula. Now, when it came time to make the change and close the practice, and if I had a choice to go to Fort Worth, Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, or Kula, Maui, who do you think I'm going to choose? Which am I going to go for? It wasn't hard. Dallas lost fast. Was Kula going to happen, though? The so-called narrative, and I don't mean this so much as a narrative. Underneath the narrative, before the narrative, beyond the narrative. See if you can hear. What's there? It wasn't just closing the practice. It wasn't just moving to a place that I felt in love with, maybe. It was that something needed to happen in my marriage. Something needed to happen with me. And it got hotter now. Kula kept pulling. And I said to my wife, I need to go there. I couched it again in language that was comfortable to me. I said, when I go there, it makes me feel like I'm 5 years old again. I always have loved her, and I still do, because she has a way of being quiet. She has a way of being quiet that I don't. have a lot that I can say about. But then when she's not quiet, she's not quiet. So I put this out. I need to do this. Obviously, it's important to talk about why. Together. She says, I fear that you're leaving me. I've heard it before. I've said it to her. I'm afraid you're leaving. Who is leaving who? I got a good one that comes out of me. I think it's a good one. I say, I have to go so that I can find you again deeper in my heart. Sounded good to me. I didn't dare say, I have to go so we can find each other deeper in our hearts again. After 33 years of marriage, 2 children, moving around, doing this, going through graduate school, working, earning money, losing money, getting sick, almost dying, going off the Klamath Mountains in Oregon with me driving the van with the kids in the back. Don't have time to go there. It was just edgy. Call it a near miss. Call it a near hit. I got another image that comes up. I said, I need to go into the wide part of the hourglass with you, honey. I need to go into the wide part of the hourglass. I need to go out here. Trust me. I'm not leaving you. I want to find you deeper in my heart again. Is cooler going to happen? I'm putting energy there. I'm not the kind of guy that really puts energy towards things in the world real often, unless they feel really, really strong to me, like retreats and things like that. Different ways that I find myself trying to help people. Then I get really into it. Material things, places, houses, not so much. Sometimes a bicycle, yeah, okay. Sometimes a soccer game, yeah, I remember that. Got a header that game, got a goal, okay, that was cool. Went by really fast though. So my style is not to push. And this isn't really opening. It's not working to find, I can't find a place. Do I have to be living there to find a place to live there? Reminds me of moving to San Francisco. It was like breaking into jail, it felt like. It's not only did I have to find a place for me and for my wife and children, we had a cat in those years. Mm-hmm. Actually, we had 2 cats. That changes a lot for people, huh? We don't take cats. Mm-hmm. Lines of people trying to rent places. Back in the 90s in San Francisco, I'm spending 3 times as much money as I've ever paid for anything for rent in Florida. Reminded me of that, but okay, I don't have to get too worked up about this. If it's gonna open, it's gonna open. If it's not, it's not. It's not opening. A couple weeks go by, it's not opening. And I give it up. I say, okay, forget it. I'm not gonna do it. I'll just visit Kula. I'll see my friends when I get there and visit. I'll go to Kauai and teach like I used to do. I'll go to Maui and I'll visit. Took about a day of that, and then bang, 4 places appeared. Bang, 1, 2, 3, 4, now I gotta make a choice. So I pull my wife in. When I don't know what to do, I pull somebody in. It reminds me of my dad. I talked about that in a small group. I pull somebody else in. Hey, what do you think about this? I throw up the pages on, you know, the screen, and I say, have a look at these places. She picks the most expensive one. She picks the nicest one. And she says, you need that one. If you go to that one, you're going to feel more depression. And don't go to that one because your friend Joel said it's too wet and cold up there in the winter. You need that one, she says to me. And she didn't say, that'd be good. She said, you need. I try to listen. I said, okay. I'm not sure I need it, but I'm going to do it. And sure enough, it opened up. Okay, got a place. Got a date, got a ticket. And the fire started. Because what am I doing this for? I don't know the difference, and I don't think she knows the difference yet in a way that really makes a difference between love and codependency. After all these years, and the children, and the money, and the work, and the moving, and all this, and I'm talking about this son, and she's quiet mostly. She's not saying, no, you're wrong, that's not going on. So I think I'm right. I think I'm right. I want to find you deeper in my heart again. Trust me. You're leaving me, Paul. You're leaving me. I'm not leaving you. It gets thicker. Her secretary at work says to her one day, "What if he doesn't want to come back?" And so she asks me that. She says, what if you don't want to come back? And I flub a little, but I tell the truth. I won't want to come back, but I will. Didn't go over so well. It's like a bomb. Like tongue-in-cheek, Paul. He doesn't know when to keep the tongue-in-cheek back there, it comes out. I meant it though. Codependency is starting to unwind. I can feel it. I can feel it at a level down deep inside I've never felt before. The blurring of the caretaking and the care is starting to unwind. I haven't left yet. Closer, 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 day comes. Takes me to the airport. I'm not in any kind of lull. I'm very alert. It's hard to say goodbye. Does it in her typical style. She slips a beautiful card in my suitcase. Wish I could read it to you, but it captures not only the Dharma, it captures the journey of healing, it captures so many things in about 5 lines. I land, I feel so disoriented. What am I doing? This is insane. This is too much, Paul. Turn around, go back, my mind's going crazy. I get to my place. Looks a lot like the pictures. I think it might work, Paul, I think it might work. Stay true to your intentions. I gotta coach myself. Are my meditative instructions strong enough? Are my vows clear enough? Am I safe? I'm not going off to some country where I don't know anybody and can't speak the language. People do that all the time. I'm going where I have some friends. It's warm. It's Kula Maui. What are you doing thinking this is hard? I've been flipping back and forth around in these spaces. Getting a little grounded, finding out where the farmers markets are. Okay, starting to get some sleep, get over the jet lag. 4 days in, it gets even more interesting. For me at least. I think so for my wife. We get a call on the phone. I get a call on the phone. It's a 6-hour difference in the time, so it's a little hard to hook up, but we make it. We get to the phone, we figure out when we can connect in there. We've got this place and time we can talk. She says, got something to tell you. I said, what is it? She said, something happened. I said, okay. Slow but sure. About 3 years ago, we rescued a greyhound from the tracks of Sanford in South Florida. Her name was Fly Heidi Klum. She had a stellar racing career, 150 races, 35 first place, 22 second place, mixed placement for the remaining. Rapid career. When we got her, I went online, I looked at her races, I watched her race. It was elegant, it was gracious, it was beautiful, and it seemed like really unfair to her. Got to change that name fast, she said to me, Valerie did. She said, we got to change this name here. What are we going to do? Fly? No, can't use that. Here, Fly. Clum. Come here, Clum. Here's your dinner. That's not going to work. Heidi. Heidi. I like it. Didn't resonate. Fly Heidi Clum's got to go, okay? What's your name? What's your name? What's your name? Few names pop up, then Stella. Mm-hmm. Stella, yes, there it is, Stella. All right. 4 days into Kula Maui, the call comes. Stella's had an event ball. Okay, watch Stella's Dharma talk. She's giving a Dharma talk. She says, check on your phone, there's a picture illustrates the event. You might want to look at that while I narrate to you. Well, okay. Stella is a really, really loving dog. I've never seen anything aggressive, hostile in her. Sleeps a lot. Pops right up and is loving, loving, so loving. 4 days into Paul's departure, she goes into the office, my office, our office in the house. She selects a book. The book is the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders. No joke, I'm going to tell you exactly how it happened, no exaggeration. She selects the book and she takes it out of the office and brings it out into the living room, where she begins to adjust it, which means rip it. Choose it. It's highly unusual. She does not do these things except a little bit with her own shoe toys. She's ripping the book into different positions, and then she opens it and makes it into two parts. So it'd be like taking this and going whoosh, and ripping it, two parts. And what is the page that she has ripped it open to and left it upon? Acute stress disorder. I don't know the diagnostic statistic number for that. It's something like 308.3. I used to remember these things, but I don't use it much anymore, so I don't know. 308.3, acute stress disorder. Wow, who's doing this one? It's very touching. We laugh. It brings a little bit of relief to the intensity of what I know we're both in. Who's gonna call who? I'm finding myself calling her more often than she calls me. Reminds me of being on a 3-month retreat with her. 34 years ago. We were deeply in love. We hadn't been together very long. We went on a 3-month retreat together. It was really hard to let go of contact. We were taking little notes and putting it in each other's teacup. And I was the one leaving more notes in hers. I was like, okay, you gotta let go here, Paul. Let go if you can. Let go, let go, let go. I'd even put a note. I am trying to let go. And then, it's like leaving gravity in a way. It's like leaving this bungee cord of like living, holding on. What is this, love? What is this, attachment? What is this? Reminds me of that. I don't talk about it. I don't bring it up. I stay true to my intention and stay true to what I said to her. I'm in an absolutely beautiful place. It's stunning. This is an island in the Hawaiian island chain. It's one of the older ones, which means, in part, there's no active lava flows like on the Big Island. I'm living in a place called Kula, which means open meadows. And maybe the word Kula is appropriate in another way. It's the coolest place in Hawaii. The elevation is between 1,200 feet above sea level all the way up to 7,000. They have a lower Kula area and upper Kula area. Lower Kula, 1,200 feet above sea level to about 2,400, 2,400 up to 7,000, upper Kula. I knew I wanted to be in upper Kula, that's where I am. I'm at about 3,300 feet up. Just down the hill to my left, it's a place called Keokia. In Keokia, the father of modern China grew up in the 19th century. Sun Yat-sen, father of modern China, and his brother Sun Mei. Sun Yat-sen led the revolution that ended China's last dynasty and established the Republic of China in 1912. That didn't mean that much to me. However, there's a Chinese community on the island, and there's a little store down there in Keokia that has the cheapest gas on the island that I have seen, and I'm going to go there every time I need some gasoline. Very sweet. Doesn't speak much English, if any. Chinese woman runs the store. What am I doing here? Where am I going? My friends, really good old friends, they've lived there a long time. Their lives blew up when they first went there. Their marriages fell apart. They give me food right away. And it's not exactly the food I would eat. It's like coming here. It's not exactly the food I would eat, but it's good. I said to my buddy, I don't usually eat garbanzo beans. He said, I made them. I said, okay, I'll eat them. They say, you want to do the crater? Mount Haleakala is right up behind where I'm living. It goes from 3,000 feet up to 10,000 feet. At the top of Mount Haleakala, all the way to the bottom of Mount Haleakala, which is in the ocean, is higher than Mount Everest. I know why I'm here, in part because I want to be on, in this mountain. You want to hike the crater? I don't care how I feel. I don't care how jet-lagged I am. I don't care how any of that's happening. Yes, when? Saturday. It's 11 miles, Paul. Bring your sandals, Claudia says. Bring your sandals, because at the end you're going to want to take off your shoes right away. It's incredible. We go up there. It's like walking on the moon. 10,000 feet, we go down into the crater. Why else am I here? Some scientists have said this is the quietest place on the earth, and they didn't just go up there and sit still and listen. They went up there with instrumentation and measured. I still don't think it's necessarily the truth, because did you go every place on the planet and measure it? And is that why you're saying this is the quietest? I don't think so. What does that mean? I don't care. It's really quiet. It's an incredible day. We finished the hike. They say, you available next Saturday? No, I have some better things to do. I said, yeah, what? Salt trip. We're gonna go to a part of the island that almost nobody goes to. And we're gonna gather salt. You in? I said, absolutely. Now there are four-wheelers and then there are crawlers. A crawler is a truck that is bigger than a four-wheeler. This is what you need to get to this place. We go down on this four-wheeler crawler thing. It takes a long time. It's a special gearing. We got to go down in there. It's like if you have any possibility of a back strain, it's probably going to get strained riding down there. I'm hanging on to the inside of the cab like this as we're going down. Takes a long time to get down there. We get down there, it's wicked hot, it's wicked dry, we're on a lava field. Lava flowed through there in the 1700s. There's these, what were like, kind of Machu Picchu-like things that they built houses in. You can still see the rocks. We go down there, there's nobody down there except some fishermen way out on the points throwing out their lines. We start looking for salt. They told me, they said, we're either going to find some salt or we're not going to find some salt. Depends on conditions that you can't, like, predict ahead of time. We get down there and it's like, this is pretty cool. There's all these little pools with salt. So then we got to get the salt and I put the dirt in the salt. I'm liking it, except it's really hot. It's really dry and the wind is whipping. They said, don't get down too close to the ocean, because people sometimes slip, and if you slip in here, you're going to die. We're not going to be able to pull you out, so don't go down too close. I go, okay. And I'm looking around, what else is going on here? And I see these two dudes. They're very dark-skinned. I don't know whether they're Hawaiian, Portuguese. Don't know. Doesn't matter. And they've got, like, these hoods on. They're dressed exactly the same. And they have this belt around their body, and they have these pouches, and then they have these little tools, and they're like clones. And I said to my friend Claudia, I said, what are they doing? Omopia, they're getting these little snails. They're a delicacy. I feel really stressed, and yet this feels like just a wonderful thing to just be in the presence of. And I said, can I walk up to them? She said, it's up to you, but I probably let them be. Just take it in from here. I didn't ask more about that. It's incredible. We got all this salt. I'm eating it every day now. Claudia's grandmother in Austria said to her, this is the best salt I've ever eaten. Clearly, they've been to this place many times to get salt. I'm here to walk. I find the Kula Forest Reserve. You gotta drive up a road that goes. No joke. And then you walk in. And you get up there, and it's like, okay, yeah. Nobody. I like it. Quiet. I like it even more. I find two trails. One is about 3 mile loop. Down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up. Hear sounds. What's that sound? Feral pigs. Can hear them, occasionally see them. That's what they sound like. I learned that there's goats up there and also deer. And then I come upon the acorns. They look like little colored gnome hats, little brightly colored triangles with a round base. Each one I pick up is like a collector's item to me. I've got three, I think later. Triple gem. Buddha Dharma Sangha. Silence and stillness. It's serenely silent in the forest. When we listen, we are so often accustomed to listening for something, listening to something, including listening to the silence. I'm listening. Often without recognizing it, we're often listening so that we may get something from listening. Deep in our conditioning and upbringing is the notion of getting something. Why do anything unless you're going to get something? Living to get. Why do we cling? Teachings say ignorance. Why do we cling if not to try to get and keep? When we observe that our eyes are operating, looking at the world, we often look to see. What did you see? Did you see that? When we taste food or other things, we often search to identify the taste, even to compare it or to say, perhaps, I've never tasted anything like that before. And I read this line this morning. I've never tasted anything like that before. And pop, the memory of Yashi Dongden, the physician to the Dalai Lama, popped out. I don't know exactly how it happened. It was a long time ago, but I had a session, a therapy session, in Gainesville, Florida, with Yashi Dongden. Now, in Ram Dass and Paul Gorman's book, How Can I Help?, which is a fantastic book, I highly recommend it. There's a story about Yashi Dongden going on rounds with doctors in an American hospital. And they're talking about the heart, and they're talking about the circulation, and here's this, and the reading of that. And Yashi Dongden has got up at 3 a.m. and done practices for hours to prepare himself to go on rounds. And when it's his turn to talk about the patient, after he's maybe touched them or looked at them or felt their pulse, he's talking about the wind, and he's talking about the fire, and he's talking about these metaphors that represent this person's condition. I don't know how I'm in front of this man, but I'm in front of this man in a room. He's got a translator, and he doesn't speak English, and he wants to see my tongue, and he's looking at my forehead. And then he leans forward and he reaches down with his hands and he puts them on my knees. And I don't know what he's doing. And then I don't care what he's doing, because it just feels great. He comes out of holding my knees and he tells the assistant in Tibetan something that I don't understand. And the next thing you know, the guy pulls out this bag of these little brown, what I began to realize in my own way of seeing them, yogi turds. And he told me to eat these 3 times a day, at least 7 of them. And I am going to do this. And I ate these things, and they taste like, it's not dirt. No, the right word is a yogi turd. That's the right word. And I will eat these things until the bag is done. Is that a familiar taste? No way. There's nothing in the world I've ever tasted like that. But because of how you related to me and touched me, I will eat anything you tell me to eat. I don't know whether it did anything for me or not. Same thing with smell and touch. Is this a familiar sense experience? Again, naked awareness is bare of three things: judgment, decision, and commentary. And when the commentary falls out, lo and behold, eventually comparison falls out. Living through the senses in what wants to be realized. What happens when any of us, for just an instant, glimpse, just an instant, that perhaps there's nothing to get and nothing to get away from? Bang, spacious, open awareness. This isn't about acceptance, because as helpful and harmonizing as the practice of acceptance can be, if we look closely and deeply and honestly, we find that we have to keep repeating the practice of acceptance. We have to keep repeating it, because we're always coming up, life is coming up with the thing that we haven't yet accepted. And so the work has to go on and on. We actually may not see it, but we're on the round of samsara. We're on the round of samsara with what most people would say, that's a very wholesome factor there, acceptance. Ongoing effort. And then inside that, maybe a belief, blind or not, that living this way is the way you gotta go. And moreover, in cases that if you keep doing this, you will get better. Mm-hmm. Overinvestment in hopefulness lives in the shadow of doubt. I want the proof that this is the way to live. I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was the Gestalt therapy that appeared. It's a very, very real and direct and powerful kind of psychotherapy, somatic-based. And the big mantra in those years was, lose your mind and come to your senses. Get out of your head, get into your body. If we get out of our head and get into our body, even in these few short, sometimes very long moments of our practice here, deeply entering the senses, particularly of sight and sound, and then the body itself as well, it opens a deep nonverbal connectivity that's silent, simple, and vast. Steve reminded us the word interbeing. This connectivity has the power to release the story, release the narrative, the often tangled web of ideas, projections, memories, beliefs, and finally, views of limitation. You know where limitation comes from? A view that this is limited, I am limited. It's a view, it's a perspective. The connectivity of the senses has the possibility to release that. Second, few seconds, minute. There's no way you can like regulate it or control it. It's really very simple, it's obvious, and it's seemingly like nothing special. But it helps clarify what the senses are really for. Let's go there now. What are the senses really for? Simple. Orientation, navigation. Getting around. You want to drive a car at the end of the retreat? Senses need to be working. Ride a bicycle, take a walk, et cetera, et cetera. Number two, helps us live in the here and now rather than in the never-ending story, the abstractions and commentaries that can leave us tired, alone, and wandering around in our own heads. Number three, help us remember who and what we are before any concept of self and other emerge. That's childlike wonderland. And with this and understanding, they set up, very important, Steve helped us get there partly last night, these senses, these very senses that we're gifted with, they help set us up to stabilize and open to the wonder of dying. The wonder of dying. and the final breath moment itself, which has the power to open and does open, whether we see it or not, varies the ground luminosity, our true nature. As the physical elements dissolve, so too, in their own way and time, the senses will fade out and dissolve. Just as they do every night when we fall asleep, we get a taste of this dissolution. We get a taste of the ground luminosity. Do we see it though? Are we ready to see it, or do we fall asleep? Do we nod off? This very same standing practice that I've been sharing with you comes from a teacher that I studied with, Christopher Titmus, who was the monk in Thailand for 5 years. Hardcore PhD in Vipassana insight meditation with a very, very revered master, Ajahn Damodaro. Ajahn Damodaro went into a room by himself and stayed there until he woke up and he came out. I mean, he did a lot of other things that got him warmed up for that. Very powerful man. My teacher, Christopher Titmus, did the standing meditation 3 hours a day with an elderly monk named Po Long Put. Po Long Put was probably in his late 70s, 80s when they started practicing. They did the standing practice for 3 years, give or take, 3 hours a day, each on the side of the tree. And go have tea. It's 12 noon till 3 p.m. 12 noon to 3 p.m., that's their practice time. Long Put developed an illness, got a cancer. And his standing meditation went from 3 hours to 2 hours. 2 hours, 1 hour. 1 hour, half hour. Almost down to like 20 minutes is all he could do. Cancer was developing, and he needed to go to the hospital, He accepted, he didn't want to, but he accepted, he went to the hospital. He's in the hospital for a while, and he said, "There's no place for me. I need to go back to the monastery. Take me back to the monastery." They brought him back to the monastery. Now he's doing lying down meditation. He's going from here to here. And Christopher's going in and hanging out with him. Now Christopher at that point in his development was recognized as quite capable and gifted, and so he was sent out by Ajahn Damodaro to teach in the villages, to teach the Dharma. So Christopher's doing this, and then one day, as he's out teaching, some messengers, kids, I guess, part of the monastery, they came, they were sent, and said, go get Christopher, bring him back. Po Long Put is close, the end is coming. He hustled back, he came into the room, got down beside Po Long Put. Po Long Put's going, my eyes can't see. My ears can't hear. Senses are fading. Pulse is still going. And he goes, "Lord Yarma." Is personification of death. "Lord Yarma is looking for me all over the universes and cannot find me anywhere." He's proclaiming the deathless. Sure enough, fades out. Not a ripple of struggle. Pulse is gone. "Lord Yarma is looking for me all over the universes and cannot find me anywhere. Death cannot find me anywhere." When somebody like that passes in a community like that, it's really, really important teaching. And since Christopher was so close with Po Long Put, because they meditated together, everybody knew this, standing together, you don't make these things happen. You open to them happening. hey, you want to stand with me? It's not like that. It's a resonance, a deep, deep, silent resonance. Spiritual friends. I'm not saying that as kids you can't say to the hey, will you be my friend? And then they say, yeah, I'll be your friend. And then you end up being spiritual friends. It just never happened to me like that. I didn't ask him to be my spiritual friend. He just is. So they asked Christopher to give a talk in the community the night after Polonput had passed. About 300 or 350 people in attendance for the Dharma talk that night. So what's he going to talk about? He's going to talk about Polonput. He's going to talk about the standing. He's going to talk about this silent resonance, this beautiful, intimate relationship. And he comes up to the point in the talk where he says, I feel deeply in my heart that Polonput is an arahant. Arahant's a fully realized being, fully liberated. The moment he says that, boom, the whole sangha, sadhu, sadhu. That means well said. Sadhu. Together in unison. Lord, your arm is looking at me all over the universes and cannot find me anywhere. May we all be so fortunate. As these physical elements, as these sense organ functions dissolve, as they do in deep sleep, from our awareness, excuse me, consciousness, not necessarily from our awareness, very subtle. And then out of that deep sleep state, right, which we know so well as nothing, nowhere, no one, we know it. Arises the night dreams. And what's the night dream? And the night dream appears as one or more of the senses operating. Are your dreams more visual? Are they more auditory? Are they more kinesthetic? Was there a strong taste in your dream? Was the kinesthetic sense there but not there in the way the body is here right now? Was it more up in this part? What's it like? Even before consciousness comes back all the way with the morning bell, hopefully, the dreams of night are appearing and disappearing. Those who say, I don't dream, they don't remember their dreams. There's remembering your dream, and then there's being aware that you're dreaming while you're dreaming. Mindfulness shows up literally directly in the dream. But the sense organs themselves, along with their objects, keep arising and passing, don't they? That's their nature. That's their truth. Even as they arise and pass over and over, they are still the gateway to what is known as the world. They are how we know what we call the world, whether we're just talking about the earth world that we're sitting on, the world of relationships with other humans, or the world inside our ideas and fabrications in our mind. They have in Buddhist psychology what's called the sixth sense. That's the mind itself. Thoughts are really sensations which are sensed by the sixth sense, the mind itself, in the form of what? Consciousness. From the point of view of an apparent separate individual, everything that happens exists on relative scales of okayness, not okayness, fairness, unfairness, rightness, wrongness, usefulness, uselessness. And yet from awakened nature, everything that's happening is completely appropriate and acts as an invitation to clear a scene. Now, let's be very clear about that. Everything that's happening is completely appropriate and acts as an invitation to clear a scene. This in no way is condoning violence. It's in no way saying turn a blind eye. If you see violence, if you find it inside, do everything you can to stop it. Do everything you can to intervene. Sounds a contradiction, doesn't it? Hopefully not. This book I mentioned, What Wants to Be Known, by Paul Goodberg, very small book, very interesting book. There's a very powerful part in there where he says, once you realize what's really going on, he finds his own words, what's really going on here in terms of the manifestation of the sacred, that's the word that he uses, then you must care for the welfare of others. It's not you should or you could or if you've got the energy or if you've got the time. It's an imperative. And this is not an imperative as something that is imposed upon you. This is something that your heart demands. Generosity is the same thing. His uncle was just giving things away to the point where the family didn't even have proper food in the house because the uncle had given it away to people in the neighborhood, Bronx, New York. So, from the vantage point of apparent individuality, and I mean the word apparent individuality, existence reflects back the sense of separation. I'm here, that's there. The senses have the power to close that gap. Boom. You might still be going, yeah, there's a tree over there and I'm over here, but it gets at least a little bit wobbly if you really feel the love for nature. And these cows living next to me on the spot I'm in Kula, they don't come over to the fence very often. They're usually over here munching and over here munching. All they're doing is munching. I think their name should be Munchin. Just munching, 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 and sometimes you can hear them. Okay, but sometimes they come over, and you've looked in cows' eyes. They're a little bit like horses' eyes. Wow, that's swimming. Who's in there? You go like that. They're not necessarily huggable. Okay, Stella's huggable. So on Thursday mornings, I go with the mermaids. It's these people who've been swimming together. And there's this one, she's a leader, she used to sing in the Joe Cocker, do you know that singer?
Yeah. Passed away.
So Joe Cocker used to have backup singers. And Pamela was a backup singer with Joe Cocker. And Pamela is a director. On the first swim that I had with her and the other mermaids, and mermaids is a term that includes men and women, so they're mermen and mermaids. And she says to me at the end of the swim, which is very vigorous, there a lot of these folks are in their 70s, but they're very good swimmers. And you gotta swim together because if you don't know what you're doing there, you could just get bit by a shark. And one of the mermaids did about 2 years ago. She got bit by a shark right in the neck and she bled out within 30, maybe 45 seconds. Bad day for the mermaids. So you gotta be together. It's a little bit like you gotta work together, you gotta be with somebody, okay? So we do this as a group. At the end of the first swim, okay, she decides to single me out, and I've been told ahead of time, I've been informed that she has a style, and the style somewhat is shaming occasionally, and I said, that's not gonna be okay with me, okay? I'm very stressed. I'm in a very, 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 very challenging time. I don't say this, I just feel it. Okay? I'm in a lot of transition. I'm only out here to have a good time. I wanna swim, and I wanna see the turtles, and if lucky, I wanna see some dolphins. Okay, I don't need anybody shaming me. I just think this, and I say, okay, I think I'm going to be all right. But I got my eye on the Joe Cocker singer. I got my eye on Pamela. From the moment we get in the water, I'm watching her. I can feel her. She's watching me too. It's all right. It's fun. We're dancing. We're swimming. We're mermaids. Now, you're not supposed to touch the coral. The coral there is at risk. The coral shouldn't really be touched at all. But we've just swum a long ways, and I'm pretty tired, and I'm stressed out, and I just moved, okay? I'm still jet-lagged, and I still don't know what the hell I'm doing, and I hope Valerie takes me back. That's just part of my story. But I do get a little tired at the halfway point, which they called the aquarium. It's absolutely beautiful. It's gorgeous. There's all kinds of fish. It's beautiful. It's fun. I'm into it, but I'm also still, I'm really still struggling. And then there's Pamela. Got to keep my eye on her. Well, I take my eye off her. You know how you try to do something, you try to keep it going, and the next thing you know, you slip. There's a gap, and you're not. So I just put, like, my right butt cheek. It was like meditating on just one cheek. Okay, I put my right sits bone. I just touch a piece of coral with my right butt, and I just rest it there for a second. Not much weight, because you're in water, right? Not much weight. I just go like this, and there she is, right up there. She says, it's best not to touch the coral. I say, okay. Swim goes on. We get back to the landing, and then she says, Paul, I don't want to talk. I don't even want to listen. I'm exhausted. I feel kind of good, but I'm exhausted. I don't want to talk. She goes, Paul. 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 I have something I want to tell you. She says it so everybody hears. I have something I want to tell you. Do you know Jack Kornfield? And she says, do you know the teachers who teach with Jack Kornfield? Somehow she learned from the others that, you know, I have something to do with Vipassana. Do you know the other people? You know, I said, yeah, I know them. She says, well, so-and-so. She tells me this quick little story. It goes right over my head. I don't even listen to it. And she says, typically, the people who come on the swim for the first time don't get a name. But you're going to get a name. I'm not liking this too much. She gives me a name, and I can't even remember. It goes right over my head. It was just like four words, like something mermaid, beep, 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 goes over my head. And she says, and I'm giving this to you because I really like you. And I went, that's kind of sweet. And I said, well, I just stepped right in, you know, and I said, I woke up right a little bit. I said, I usually kiss people when I really like them, but I don't know you well enough, so I just reached her up on the cheek and I said, son, let me just do this. How's this? And I twisted her cheek a little bit. And everybody around me was like. Now, two of the women who come in from time to time who were there, they were like poetic types, and one was a meditation teacher that, you know, and I don't really want to talk. They gave me the warmest hugs afterwards. They haven't been back. I haven't seen them lately. They're somewhere else, I guess. It's a big group. There's like 70 people in it. They come and go, and some of them are getting sick, and there's hospitalizations, and then there's parties, which are all organized and directed by Pamela. She's in charge of the whole thing. She checks the weather. She sends out the emails. I mean, I've gotten six of them since I've been here. We're having a swim on Tuesday. Anybody want to come? We're going to go to McKenna Beach. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Okay, the last time I swam was a few days before coming here. This like marathon swimmer that I haven't seen before shows up, and they said this lady can fly. And I watched her in the water. I didn't know what she was doing. Her technique was really interesting. It was weird to me, but she was going fast. It turned out I had to get back earlier because I needed to go to the dentist. And Pamela told me, Paul, don't make any appointments too soon in the afternoon after the swim. I don't like being told what to do, but that's her style. It's telling other people what to do, too. So I got part of the group, so she tells me what to do. And I say, okay, with full intention not to respect that. Okay. Then she comes a little further. She says, you know, we need a ride down together. I need to get to know you. I told Claudia, my protector. Claudia, remember her? She's the one who said to me, you know, the stuff about the salt and everything from Austria and her mother and all that. Claudia said, don't worry, I'm your bodyguard. Claudia is this little dynamo. She's so happy all the time. I asked her husband, Joel, why is Claudia so happy all the time? He said she has no trauma. I've learned different lately. I've gotten closer to Claudia. She's had some trauma. She's very interesting. I almost said, let's Skype her into this retreat because she can chant like unbelievably beautiful. When we went up in the crater, she's chanting these Hawaiian chants. She's got no self-consciousness. It doesn't matter whether there's other people or not. She's just a being of consistent loving energy. When she said, "I'm your bodyguard," I said, I'm okay now. I'm really okay now. Pamela can throw anything at me. The last swim, I need to get back early, so it turns out I've got to swim with this marathoner swimmer. They said, "Get on her tail and stick with her." Oh, this is going to kill me. All right, here we go. She goes off in a total different direction than the one I think was supposed to go in to go back, because you get disoriented out there if you're not careful. I do, at least. She goes in this different direction. We get into this other area. All of a sudden, there's this magnificent giant turtle. It's about this wide. It's got no scars on it. It comes flying right up. We get eye to eye about 3 feet away. It's glorious. Looking at your true nature. It's only a few seconds. I say to her, "This is an incredible turtle." She says real quick to me, "I hope the others can see it too. Come on, we gotta go." And she takes off. She's killing me. We get almost all the way back. I still got another maybe quarter of a mile to go. This is a long ways. We're talking like 3 miles of swimming. And we get to this spot. She said, "How you doing?" I said, "Oh, well, you know, I'm hanging in there." She said, "Well, listen, I gotta pick it up a little bit. You okay making it back the rest of the way on your own?" I said, "Yeah, I can see where I need to go." She said, "Just go right for that line there. Just go right for that line." She says, "Bye." She takes off. The perception of you that may be listening, being interested, maybe not being as interested, trying to understand or believing that you're meditating, is exactly what is seen through an awakening. It's seen through and poking a hole right in the middle of the perception belief that you are going to realize. You're going to realize something. Something's going to happen. It's going to happen to me. It's that fabrication of mind that pops. And that's the pop of the meditator and the meditation. That bubble pop. You don't have to go into shock for this. You don't have to go into trauma for this. And you don't have to wait till you die. You can't actually do anything about this, just like you can't fundamentally do anything about the fact that within the nature of this body is the nature of dying. Yet, there can be, hopefully, this being a sense of, yes, it's more than can be, I'm falling in love with this possibility of interest, curiosity, wonder, about the amazing opportunity that life gives us to sit on the existential edge, the existential cliff. So I push myself out on that cliff. I knew I wouldn't want to go to a retreat like the ones I've done in the past. I knew I didn't want to move to Dallas-Fort Worth. I knew I couldn't stay, but I didn't know where I was going. Still don't. My friend Joel, Claudia's husband, said, "Paul, you gotta understand something about being here. I know you can handle it," he says to me. I've known him since the 80s. He says, "I know you can handle it, but this place turns up the fire. People's lives fall apart. Their money falls apart. Their health falls apart. Their relationships fall apart." I know he's talking from his own experience. "I don't want to fall apart anymore," I think inside. I don't say that. I just kind of nod my head. "Yeah, I got you." Then he threw a few of these kind of poetic sort of nice words around it. It's the mountain. It's the mana. It's to go to Sedona, it's the vortex. It's gonna suck you in, push you out, you know, cause you to sprain your ankle. You know, a lot of superstition there. No, he's right though. And I went back to him and I said, you know, where I'm at in my life right now, I think it doesn't matter where I would go. It's hot wherever I go inside. Tapas is very strong. Tapas is a word for the spiritual fire. So it turns out it's the other way around from how we think. We're talking about falling into nothing needs to happen. Nothing needs to change. There's nothing to realize and there's no one to do it. This is the great space beyond the gate. We've been pointing at the gate. What about the space beyond the gate? And the mind can't make any sense of this because the mind is busy thinking it's somebody and it can do something. Mm-hmm. And we might all be better off if we were like that turtle who's never heard about enlightenment. It's also very interesting and strange. One day I came out of the Kula Forest Reserve. There's a place you come out, and then you got to walk on a road. The only way you can go on that road is you got to have a four-wheeler, which I don't. So it's a longer walk for me, but that's okay. I like it. My two trails, my one that I go down and around, and then the second trail, I go up to 7,000 feet, and I get up in the mist. The weather's changing really fast, and the air is as clean as I've ever smelled. This can't be bad for me, I think, when I go up there. One day I come out and there's this fully new clothes, equipment, all the stuff, Hunter. He's putting on the yellow vest and he's putting on the boots and everything looks brand new and shiny, including his Toyota Tacoma truck. So I go, okay, I got a little bit in me, I'll say something here. Hey, how you doing? He goes, fine. Have a good walk? I said, yeah, it was good. Space. My turn. What are you hunting here? Goats. Do you eat them? No, I don't eat them. I give them to my Filipino friends. I said, what is the meat like? He said, it's tough. He said, but they know how to tenderize it. I said, oh, okay, this isn't the most interesting conversation. So I relax a little bit, even though it's not that interesting. It's, what else is going to happen here? I lean on his truck. As soon as I lean on his truck, he says, don't touch the truck. I wanted to say why, but I didn't. I just took my arm off and I said, have a good day. And he said, enjoy the rest of your walk back, sir. With this stiff politeness. And my mind just kept going, you can make a story out of this, Paul, but why did he say don't touch the truck? Do I have cooties? Am I dirty? I mean, you just drove the truck in over the mud and rocks and stuff, and it got like that shit on the bottom of it, and now you're telling me not to. Remember why you came to Kula, Paul, okay? By the way, plan is stay there until June and come back. Come back to my wife. If I can, I'm going to get her to come see me, but she hasn't committed to it yet. That's kind of interesting. You're going to come see me at Thanksgiving? And I put it out a little bit more gentle. I said, you know, I'm having an imagination that you'll just go online and you'll just get lucky on a Tuesday about 3 p.m. and you'll find one of those bargain tickets during the holidays and you'll come see me. Silence. She's the one who said to me after the first 10-day meditation retreat that we did, we finished the retreat and she looked me square in the eye and she said, can we stay here? And I was like, no, the retreat's over. It's time to go. Everybody's leaving. I want to go out and go camping and I want to hug you. Can we stay here? Think back on that. I wish I said yes. Too late. We cannot do anything that will bring us closer to being what we already are. realization of what you truly are is the same as awakened or essential nature. Same. Life is as it is, things are as they are, no matter what your story, narrative, perception, belief, imagination, abstraction is about it. The isness of it all is its own purpose and doesn't need a reason to be. And it doesn't need a purpose function to be added to it. That's the beauty, and it's already here. Are you available? This is not assigned by preference, and it's not assigned by belief. There's nothing to attain except the realization that there's absolutely nothing to attain. And this realization just appears as clear seeing that it's happening for and to no one. Spacious, naked, open awareness. The human can never find in him or herself that which is presumed lost. Your true nature rests in quiet, you could say exile, the open secret, ever awaiting your availability. The irony is that the presumption of lost requires the journey towards gain. Very important piece. The presumption of something lost requires the journey of gain and is precisely seen through this fabrication that reveals freedom. This is the greatest of all inheritances. And no time, place, tradition, set of teachings, group, or person can lay claim to it. It is not Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Sufi. It is not yours. It is not mine. It has no price, no tag. It's either unrecognized, even rejected, or it's realized and lived. If it is somewhat realized and lived, it has the power to unwrap all of the conditions that obscure it. Steve took us beautifully into the Heart Sutra, one of the most cherished sutras and teachings in all of Buddhism, even though it's in the Mahayana tradition. Here's its complementary friend. We don't have a lot of time. Over significantly. The Diamond Sutra. Diamond Sutra is the perfection of wisdom text that cuts through like a thunderbolt. The most honored and famous short phrases from the Diamond Sutra go like this. Notice the imagery. A star at dawn. A bubble in a stream. A flash of lightning in a summer cloud. A flickering lamp, a phantom, a dream. So is all conditioned existence to be seen. These images point at seeing through, not just seeing clearly. What is going on here? This is the infinite at play rest. No more, no less than the turtle. No more, no less than the acorns. No more, no less than the Hawaiians or Polynesians gathering those delicacies down at the life death edge. I said to Claudia, they are so close to the water. She said they know what they're doing. It's all happening as energy happening timelessly. This is the infinite expression. Mayor Baba. He's the one who helped us remember that the deep sleep state is God. Wake up in that state, not out of that state. He said, being is dying by loving. Being is dying by loving. I wanted Hafiz to come. That's what I wanted. But just like I wanted the discomfort in the body to decrease in Kula, and it increased, it didn't decrease. Did I make a mistake? What do you think? But I could not avoid Rumi. When Coleman Barks reads Rumi, he says, in order to read Rumi properly, I have to die. It's a tall order, Coleman. Rumi says, love is the cure for your pain. We'll keep giving birth to more pain until your eyes constantly exhale love, as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. Have you ever noticed when someone is feeling a lot of love, they smell like patchouli? You gotta check. You never know what you're gonna get, but you gotta check. And by the way, just between you and me, this is confidential right now. The only part of the talk is confidential. You can tell anybody else, anything else about anything you want. I've really been enjoying not wearing deodorant out there. And sometimes I just smell terrible in my own opinion. Because when you're scared, which I'm still scared a lot, it's a certain kind of smell. And it's very different than patchouli. This is called the silkworm. I stood before a silkworm one day, and that night my heart said to me, I can do things like that. I can spin skies. I can be woven into love that can bring warmth to people. I can be soft against a crying face. I can be wings that lift, and I can travel on my 1,000 feet throughout the earth. My sacks filled with the sacred. And I replied to my heart, dear, can you really do all those things? And it just nodded, yes, in silence. So we began, and will never cease. Rumi's considered by many people to be the greatest poet in history. Ramana Maharshi is considered to be one of the greatest saints in our time. Close the talk with Ramana. Sums up the whole tree. There's no greater mystery than this. Being reality ourselves, we seek to gain reality. We think there is something hiding reality and that it must be destroyed before the truth is gained. This is clearly ridiculous. A day will dawn when you will laugh at your past efforts. When you realize on that day, you laugh. And that is also here and now. Key phrase there for me, I'm not sure what you might have resonated with. The key phrase is the opening one. There is no greater mystery than this. being reality ourselves, we seek to gain reality. And it is that seeking of that which we already are that falls apart as we wake up. Can we sit for just a minute?